Okay, welcome back. Jeffrey Sachs here from Web Yeshiva and Mishkan Tzipora in Efrat. Masechet Ta'anit closing in on the end of the second perek, although I'm not sure we're going to get there tonight. We've been discussing Megillat Ta'anit. So last week, David had mentioned a book that came out about, 8 or 9 years ago by the Israeli scholar and professor of Talmud, Vered Noam. Israel Prize recipient, and her work on Megillat Ta'anit. And Yehudi, just moments before we began, sent me by email this. Yehudi, tell us, what is this that you just sent us that we're looking at on the screen?
I sent you pages 20 and 21 of her book.
Of her book.
She discusses when the book was written.
When Megillat Ta'anit was written.
And its relationship to the Bible.
Okay, and what does, can you...
What happened? What is the Bible we do with it once it's been published? Now,
okay. Any more to your summary there?
She discussed the issue I raised last week. There's something in this whole.
But what's the conclusion? What's the conclusion?
She comes to the conclusion that the Megillat Ta'anit was probably finished in its original form by the latest 100 CD. And maybe even earlier than that. But there may have been some later editions, but none of them went post-date markup. We're talking now about the Megillah, not about the Scholion.
Right, the Scholion is a kind of later commentary on the text.
Well, I've got glasses on it. Yeah. It has a relationship with the Megillah that the Bible has.
Okay. Very good. So we recommend this. To the best of my knowledge, her book has not been translated to English. David, have you read her book?
No, I've not. I've read the different book of hers, but not she wrote a book about Avram. I read that one.
Oh, did she? That's interesting. I just got, by the way, Corain is very generous about dropping off review copies in my role as the editor of Tradition. So I just got Yonatan Grossman's Torat HaKorbanot, his book about not exactly about Vayikra, but about Korbanot.
It's about the opening few chapters of Vayikra.
Yeah, but it's not the whole of Vayikra. It's more focused on the Korbanot. 650 pages, so it's a hefty.
I saw him publicize that book on Facebook, and he said I thought it was going to be about Yosef, because he wrote a book about Avram, and he wrote a book about Yaakov, I thought the next Yosef. So someone asked him that question. He said that the thing Balei Chaim Ish Lehem Netiyah Lerdof.
The animals wander off on their own, yeah.
Yeah, they have to go.
Yeah, that's interesting.
You said Lerdof, didn't you?
Or Livroach Lerdof.
Livroach, yeah.
Why is that the same?
Yeah, it's... remind you of... Yehuda Amichai's poem about the wandering sheep or the wandering goats and their role in Jewish history. Sometimes if you follow, if it's Ikvot Ikve Hatzon, you get to interesting places like Moshe Rabbeinu or the young boy in an Agnon story or etc. Okay, here's the Gemara. We're in the middle of this discussion about, you remember, the Megillat Ta'anit has this idea, which has been apparently put out to pasture, if we're talking about goats. This whole thing, these halachot from the Megillat Ta'anit about days you don't fast, and days you don't say hespedim, and days which are so joyous that not only do you not fast and say hespedim on them, sometimes you don't do those things either on the day before or the day after. So the Gemara is trying to play out on these statements of the Megillat Ta'anit in a very Talmudic fashion. What's the point of saying that such and such a date is one of these dates, these joyous dates on which we don't fast? I would have known you can't fast on that date anyway because of a different reason. So the Gemara now says, Omar Abaye, lo nitzracha ela l'chodesh mi'ubar. Earlier, the Megillat Ta'anit had said on the 28th of Adar was a festive, a celebratory day. And you can't you don't fast on that day, the 28th of Adar, but you also don't fast on the following day, the 29th of Adar, because of the kind of holdover, the Isru Chag element, I say that in quotation marks, of the 28th. So therefore, the Gemara is asking, why do you have to say, that because of Rosh Chodesh Nisan, which is the following day, you don't fast on the day before, when that day is already prohibited? So Omar Abaye, lo nitzrucha ela lechodesh mubar, because sometimes Rosh Chodesh Nisan follows the 28th, but not always. Sometimes there's a Chodesh Mu'ubar, there's an extra day in there, and there'd be a day in between. So Rav Ashi Amar, Afilu Teima L'Chodesh Chaser. He says, even if it's a Chodesh Chaser, a month with only 29 days instead of 30 days, Kol Shela Acharav B'Ta'anit Asur B'Hefseid Mutar. He says, whenever there's a halacha, according to Rav Ashi, the halacha of Megillah Ta'anit is that when there's a festive day, and on the next day you can't fast, nevertheless, on that day following, you are allowed to have a eulogy. Right? So in that case, v'zeh ho'ilu mutau, Bein shnei yamim tovim asuhu ki yom tov atzmo vafilu behesped nami asur. However, in the case of a chodesh male of Adar, when you have a 30th day, so that there'd be a day off in between the festive day of the 28th and the following residue day, and then followed by Rosh Chodesh, nevertheless, it's what we called in America a three-day weekend. Now, there's this idea of extending. It's an idea we don't have here in Israel, Bichlal. By the way, I'm sorry, besides Yehudi, do we have anybody that's joining us from America? Only Yehudi, you're the only one that's joining us from America.
Listen, just because I happen to be looking for
No. It's fine. I just want to point out, next week, we in Israel change our clocks this Motzei Shabbat. But America doesn't do it till the following. So next week, we are only 6 hours ahead of Eastern Time America. So the Shi'ur will be an hour later next week than normal. So just be aware.
Thank you.
So like
an email too.
Yeah, we'll send that out an email. In other words, it'll still be 8:30 p.m. Israel time, but Israel time will have changed already. And then the following week, we're aligned again. So, like, in Israel, we don't have this idea of a three-day weekend, because we don't even have the idea of a two-day weekend. You know the Ben-Gurion joke. It's like one of those jokes where you don't even have to tell this. You don't have to do the setup. All you have to do is tell a punchline. Right? Somebody asked Ben-Gurion about... do we think Israel is ready to move to a 5-day work week, right, and have a proper weekend? Is Israel ready to move to a 5-day work week? And he said, oh, hold on. First, we have to move to a 3-day work week. And then we'll work our ways up to a 4-day work week. And then we'll get to a 5-day work week. But the idea of a three-day weekend... You know, it's not like our idea of a three-day. For us, a three-day weekend means a lot of yontif, which means you have to go shopping, and you have to clean, and you have to cook, and you have to invite, and you have to serve, and then you have to clean up afterwards, and you have to do the dishes. It's very holy, but it's not very relaxing. But in America, you have this idea of a three-day weekend. They line up the holidays on Mondays, so you get off Saturday, Sunday Monday. So that's basically what the Gemara is saying here. But that idea that when you have a Megillat Ta'anit day, followed by a residue day of Megillat Ta'anit, and then a day off, and then Rosh Chodesh. So we say, we give it all to you. It creates a festive season. So the truth is, there is one element of this that we're still familiar with. In Sivan, Rosh Chodesh Sivan is the first of Sivan. There's no, but Rosh Chodesh Sivan is not Shloshet Yemei Hagbala, right?
No.
In other words, Shavuot is the sixth of Sivan. Rosh Chodesh, so there's obviously no Tachanun on Shavuot. On the first of Sivan, there's no Tachanun because it's Rosh Chodesh. The third, fourth, and fifth of Sivan are what are called the Shloshet Yemei Hagbalah. These three build-up days to Shavuot that are festive in their own regard, and they don't have Tachanun. That means you're left only with the second day of Sivan, which Taka, you should say Tachanun. There's no reason not to say Tachanun on the second day of Sivan. But the minhag became that since it's stuck there between all of these other festive days, it gets carried along, and that's why we don't say Tachanun for all of those days. And that's a kind of parallel to this idea mentioned in by Rav Ashi here in the Gemara. Omar Mar, the Gemara says. Omar Mar. Here you see Omar Mar. Mitmanya Bey, the Megillat Ta'anit had said, from the 8th of Nisan, Va'ad Sof Moada, until the end of Pesach, Itutav Chaga Deshvuaya. The festival of Shavuos was established. It was fixed. It was repaired. Because you remember the story of the machloket between the Chachamim and the Tzdukim about which day Shavuot is, whether it always comes out on Machorat Shabbat, always on a Saturday night, or according to our interpretation, Machorat Shabbat of the Shabbat is not the Sabbath, not the seventh day, but the Shabbat is the day of Shvitat Melacha on the first day of Pesach. The next day we start counting Sfirat HaOmer, and then Shavuot comes out on whichever day of the week it comes out. So the victory of the rabbinic interpretation and the reestablishment of Shavuot on the proper date is celebrated at that time, and therefore there is no, according to Megillat Ta'anit, there is no eulogies. It's prohibited to eulogize during that happy time. Lama lila meimar mitmanya bay. So we ask, why does Megillat Ta'anit have to tell us? Why does Megillat Ta'anit have to tell us? You don't do it from the 8th, right? Lema mitish abe. It should just teach us that you can't do it from the 9th of Nisan and on. Why? Umitmane gufa asur. Dehavele yoma deitukam be tmida. The 8th is a double whammy. There are two reasons not to have hesped or to fast on the 8th of Nisan. One is because it's part of this season of the restoration of Shavuot. The other is because that's the day that the Korban Tomid was rescued from a separate problem. I mentioned to you the machloket between the Chachamim and the Tzdukim, over whether or not the Korban Tomid could be brought from only from communal funds, or if it could even be brought from private funds. So on the 8th, you don't need, it's kind of like pedantic. It's like a little bit like Talmudic hair splitting. Why waste the ink? I mean, the Amorayim were so worried that the Tanaim had wasted ink. You know, just like we were concerned that there's no wasted ink in the Torah. I mean, is ink so expensive? But no, it can't be that we say something unnecessary. So you don't need to tell me that you can't have Hespedim from the 8th on. You only have to tell me from the 9th on. The 8th I knew already because of the whole issue of the Korban Tamid. So, okay, I mean, you might objectively say, yeah, all right, I mean, it's two different things. There's two different reasons. And that's more or less what the Gemara says. Kevan de'ilu mikla le milta uvatlina l'shiva tmanya gufa asur. If something should occur, if some calamity or tragedy or a pogrom or something should happen, and they were to cancel these 7 celebratory days, which would be the 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th, and 14th, right? So it could be, the Gemara says, that these festivals of Megillat Ta'anit, they're not exactly like Pesach, Sukkot, and Shavuos. It's not Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. It could be that they will not be observed forever. You know that there were, if you've ever read, if you know the book by Professor Yosef Yerushalmi, Zachor. Do you know that book? When I was in graduate school, it was on the syllabus of every course I did in my MA in Jewish history. It was the kind of book you had to read again and again and again. Zachor by Professor Yosef Yerushalmi, late of Columbia University. So it's an examination of how Jewish memory works. And one of the chapters there are about what were called the local Purims. If in Prague there was a pogrom, and the Jews were somehow delivered from the pogrom, on that date, for decades, for centuries later, they observed it as Purim de Prague, as the Prague Purim, using the Purim of Megillat Esther as a kind of template for how to celebrate deliverance from calamity. And they had different customs that were very much modeled on the international Purim, the Purim of Shushan. They would sometimes even write a kind of a faux Megillah, you know, written sometimes in the style of Megillat Esther, sometimes written out on cloth, and it would be read, and it was the story of what happened in that community. And they would have a su'udah, and they would maybe recite piyutim of praise as part of their tefillah, and they would give gifts, you know, like shalach manos, and they would do other things in celebration of their own local redemption. The people in Hamburg did not need to celebrate the Purim of Prague because the pogrom from which the Jews in Prague were delivered didn't affect directly the Jews in Hamburg or the Jews in Warsaw or the Jews in Rome. And there were dozens and dozens of these local Purims, just like, by the way, there were dozens and dozens of local memorial days. If there was a place where there was a pogrom that didn't end well and many people were killed, sometimes on a particular day connected with those events, the local community would fast in commemoration of their townsmen who were killed. As a matter of fact, thank you, Yehudi, the 20th of Sivan, during the Gzerot Tachvatat, was the worst day of pogroms in Jewish history up to that point, from Churban Bayit Sheni up until its overshadowing in the Shoah. And for almost 300 years, there were customs, there were communities who, throughout, mostly of Eastern European stock, who were accustomed to observe the 20th of Sivan as a fast day. And they had kinot that they recited on, they had a slichot that they recited on the 20th of Sivan. Up till the Holocaust. right? In 1648-1649, the Khmelnytsky revolts that swept through Eastern Europe, which were centered on what today is Poland and Ukraine, but had very wide-ranging effects. The exact number of deaths is not known, but it was in the many, 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 many tens, possibly hundreds of thousands. Many, many dozens of communities were decimated during the pogroms of Khmelnytsky in 1648-1649, what's called Tach V'Tat. Those are the Gematria years of 48 and 1649. And in Nemirov, on the 20th of Sivan, 1648, there was this terrible pogrom. Nemirov is a town in central, what today is central Ukraine, very near to Uman, the resting place of Rabbi Nachman of Breslov. And they took the Jews out to a lake in Nemirov, and they slaughtered them and dumped the bodies into the lake. Today, if you travel to Ukraine on a tour, the bus always pulls up near this lake, and on the bank of the lake is the Nemirov factory. Nemirov is the leading brand of vodka in Ukraine. It's like a Smirnov in Russia. And the vodka, the Nemirov vodka, is distilled from the water of this lake. And they bring all the Jews that are going to Uman, they all stop at the factory store in Nemirov to buy, you know, discount. You know, they have a, what are they called? Like a factory, is that right? A factory store? Right, a factory outlet where you can get very cheap Nemirov vodka. I could not believe this. When I led a tour to Ukraine and they stopped, and of course the bus driver wants to do it because he gets for free. A bus driver who brings in a big group, he gets to take however many bottles, I don't know, of vodka for free. And the way those bus drivers were drinking, I can understand that. The way those bus drivers were driving, I can understand. They probably drink a lot of the Nemirov vodka. I went out of my mind. I could not believe that this was a stop on our tour, that we were going to buy vodka that was almost literally distilled with the blood of Jews from the waters of this lake. I found this whole thing very disturbing. Many of the martyrs of Gzerot Tach V'Tat were buried in a cemetery of the nearby town of Uman. And that's why Rabbi Nachman, who was dying of tuberculosis, thought that Uman would be a good place to go to be buried, to die. Because Rabbi Nachman was from Breslov, he wasn't from Uman, despite what it says on the kippot when they go, Nachman mi Uman, Nachman mi Uman. He was only in Uman at the end to die and to be buried. But he thought that to be buried among the righteous martyrs would be a reasonable thing, even though he died about 150 years later. So Tach V'Tat had resonance. People observed it as a fast day. Agnon writes autobiographically that he remembers as a kid fasting on Kaf Sivan and reciting the slichot that were written to commemorate Kaf Sivan. So these things have this kind of long.
Did he say anything about the lake?
Agnon? No, because Agnon was never there. Agnon never made it to, even though he lived in what today is Ukraine, it was quite far away from. Agnon lived in Galicia, which was part of the Eastern, which was part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And Uman, which is in central, Galicia was Western Ukraine. Uman is in central Ukraine, and that was part of the Russian Empire. So they were two completely different countries when Agnon lived there at the end of the 19th, beginning of the 20th century. Now, I mentioned all of this because Chazal were aware that sometimes these minor festivals come and go. Just like Kaf Sivan is not a festival, it's a mourning day. But it's no longer observed. I don't know, maybe if you go, I don't know, Chafes, maybe among some Hasidim in Me'er Sharim or Geula, there's still, you can find like a very few people that still observe Kaf Sivan. And maybe there's still some people who are like old Praguers who still commemorate, I don't even know the date of the Purim of Prague. But you can Google Purim of Prague and you'll see, you can find the date for when that was. And the Purim of all these other cities that celebrated these things. These things come and go.
There's a whole section about these barriers.
Yeah, right,
you know,
but...
Y'all told the Minsky series, Say for Hamaladim,
right. Right, but so it's mentioned in an old book, but you don't know anybody that celebrates those. We don't know anybody. Anyway, the point is, I mention this because some of these mine, unlike the biblical festivals and fast days, some of these other things, they fade with time and memory when people are no longer connected to the events, or when they get overshadowed, as Kaf Sivan was overshadowed by the Holocaust. So Chazal were aware of this idea that it could be that in the future we're gonna cancel these happy days. So if we cancel the happy days because of Shavuos, right, we shouldn't forget. Why do we state the obvious? Why do we unnecessarily state the obvious that the eighth is a happy day, right? For the Shavuos restoration, well, because maybe if that gets canceled, we'll cancel the eighth as a happy day. But the eighth has a happy day for a different reason, because of the Korban Tamid. So therefore, we state the redundant. We have the belt and the shleikus. We have the belt and the suspenders to protect the eighth. Now, this whole idea, by the way. How come there's no problem with? The Gemara momentarily will ask a very obvious question. When do we have a fast day before a festival day?
Well, we have it now with
Tan and Esther.
Yeah.
In other words, if a festival day means that the day before and the day after you shouldn't fast, but wait a second, we have, according to our custom, we have Tan and Esther. So we'd mentioned Tanit B'chor also before Pesach, right? Well, that we get out of largely.
Always, I did it a few times.
Right?
You don't have to get out of it.
So Tzom Gedalia, we have the day after Rosh Hashanah. So I'd mentioned last week or the week before the idea that the biblical, by biblical I don't just mean Torah, it could be from Tanakh, those festivals are so well established that we're not afraid people are going to treat them lightly. This need to kind of build up the happy days, right, by adding a residue or an echo of them before and after, that's for these Megillah Ta'anit, these kind of secondary level happy days. Hold on a second. Okay. So those are the days that need the bolstering of expansion and adding and padding on in order to make sure that people will properly celebrate the festival.
I wanted to comment that nowadays you could very well argue that a holiday like Rosh Chodesh, which so few people even know what day it is, and that's why you have to mention, so to speak, Shabbos before, is no one would even notice that there was a fast before or after. Purim, which is Mita Rabbanan, is, like you say, an established thing, but the Gemara says that the issue is whether it's Mita right or Mita Rabbanan, not whether it's established or not. We learned last week, or a week before, the Gemara said, if it's Mita right, ain't Tzrichim Chizuk.
Right. But it's not so much Mita Rabbanan, because Purim, after all, is Dirabanan, but it's biblical. But it's biblical. So I think the distinction is not between Midiraita and Midirabanan, but whether or not it's kind of biblical or of later origin. I think
what you said before actually hits the nail on the head. Times change. And when times change, circumstances change with them.
Certainly, but certain things don't. We're not going to get rid of. We're not going to get rid of Rosh Chodesh. We're not going to get rid of. We're not going to get rid of Purim and Hanukkah. But these other things, they've
decides these things.
Right. These other things.
I'd like to think that they're deciding these things, but as a practical matter, it's really Amplad that decides them.
To a certain degree,
the Gaonim were dead set against that. They said it was an interruption. You can't find one Babylonian Gaon who goes along with the practice. But as a practical matter, the people got their way.
There's no doubt that as opposed to cynical comments, there's no doubt that halacha is extremely democratic in this regard. Not that we take a vote, but that the practices are largely dictated upon what people do. We actually had a very interesting case in our shul where there's a new fellow in our shul who's a moel, like he's a professional moel, right? I know people are moelim; they do two britot a year, but he's a professional moel. He's doing it all the time. But we know when he shows up to shul in the morning and he's wearing a white shirt. Fancy, we know he has a bris that day, and we know there's no tachnun. Because when a moel, if a moel, the father of the nimol are present, it cancels tachnun. It cancels tachnun. Even if the brit is not taking place there, it cancels tachnun. So last week, both on Monday and on Thursday, he shows up in his white shirt, and people are delighted. They're inviting him over for Shabbos meals. They want him to feel welcome in the community. He should stay. We get a tachnun every, particularly the long tachnun Monday and Thursday. But there was a question: when you skip tachnun, because of the presence of a bris, do you also skip the yehi ratzons that are recited before the Torah is put back? After the Kriyat Torah, meaning, are the Yehi Ratzons connected to the recitation or the omission of Tachnun, or are they a reflection of a particular day? In other words, yesterday on Monday, we didn't say Tachnun because he was there and he was going to be having a Brit Milah that day, right? But there's nothing special on the calendar. It's not a day that we otherwise. So, do you say Yehi Ratzon? Is the Yehi Ratzon connected to skipping Tachnun, or is it skipping connected to one of those festive calendar days? So, people are generally happy to skip things.
Rabbi Levine would never have allowed that.
What?
I told you about.
Yes, you told me Rabbi Levine didn't like skipping Tachnun.
Rabbi
right?
Aaron Levine.
Yes. Yeah. But yeah. Yes.
First
yes.
Of all,
yes.
If a chassid came into the shul, he'd have to. So, but he would not skip the Yehi Ratzon.
Yes. No, so I apparently, as you might expect, it's a machlokas.
Yes.
But the overwhelming, apparently amongst Ashkenazim, the overwhelming majority of minhagim is that you skip it, that they are linked, that if you skip Tachnun, you skip the Yehi Ratzons. But not Lam Natzeach after Ashrei before Uvelet Zion. That goes according to the dates. However, about which dates you skip Lam Natzeach, there are, of course, different minhagim. So our Gemara, we've gotten off track.
It seems to be what we do today in Chodesh Nisan.
Yeah.
Seems to be very out of sync with what we're discussing.
Ah, because we have a later minhag that we skip the whole Nisan. You said Sivan or Nisan?
Nisan.
Yeah, so we skip the whole Nisan. That's a later minhag. But that's about Tachanun. That's not about our Gemara is not talking about Tachanun. Our Gemara is talking about a day when you would not say Hespedim or a day on which you would not fast.
And you don't say Kiyamal Yerachamim.
You don't do it. Don't
do Hesped
in Nisan.
Yehudi, let Shalom speak.
Okay, we don't do Hespedim in Nisan, do we?
That's the minhag, is not to be Maspid during Nisan.
Okay.
Right? But not because of these reasons. Not because of these reasons. For a different reason that somehow, I don't know when this minhag, or this practice, I should say, originated, we can look it up, I'm sure, that Nisan took on, we kind of extended the flavor of Pesach and Geula to the whole month.
You know, so as far as I know, the reason for not saying Tachanun, let's say, for the whole Chodesh Nisan, everything is based on biblical things. So you have the first 12 days, well, first days of Chodesh, but the first 12 days you have the Nisim.
Right.
And then you have the 14th, you have Chag HaPesach.
Right.
From the 15th to the 22nd, you have Chag HaMatzot.
Right.
The only thing missing there is the 13th. And they say that that's also a holiday because the last Nasi, the Achira ben Inan, he brought his korban on the 12th,
right.
And he could eat it also on
right.
the 13th. That was also...
Right.
So you have most of the
and after Pesach? Also, and after Pesach?
So you have most of the months. You
so, right, so we give you off the whole, the three-day weekend philosophy.
Well, it's nothing
right.
later day.
Right, so but that seems to have, that practice seems to be unrecorded in the Megillat Ta'anit. Megillat Ta'anit was working on a kind of a blank slate that in principle, but again, that's for, they're related, but that's talking about Tachanun. And Megillat Ta'anit is talking about days on which it would be forbidden to fast or forbidden to eulogize. So there's a thematic overlap, but they're not exactly the same cases. They're not exactly the same cases. Okay, so the Gemara had said, Kevan, so if a happy thing, Kevan de ilu mikla le milta uvatleina neshiva tamana gufa asur, right? In other words, as if it should get canceled, for one reason, we should remember that we still skip, we still don't fast or eulogize on the 8th because of a different reason. And so that, since that reason should not be overlooked, we state the redundant. Hashta, the atya lahachi. So since this is the case, since we came to this point, since we came to this understanding, Esrim v'tisha nami, kevan de'ilu mikla milta uvatlena le'esrim v'tmanye. Since if on an Adar, if they would cancel the 28th, which was a happy day for some reason, right? So the 29th also Esrim v'tisha gufe asur. The 29th should be asur anyway. Because it's Erev Rosh Chodesh. Dehave le Yoma de... Oh, no, not the Erev Rosh Chodesh. Dehave le Yoma de Mikmei Yoma de... Dehave le Yoma de Mikmei Yoma de Itukam Tamida. Because the 29th would still be Asur in Ta'anit and Hesped, because it was the first day of the series of days on which the Talmid was re-established. Okay, so the Gemara, these are all the same kind of structurally, these are all the same thing.
Rabbi Sachs?
Yes, Yehudi.
I know, which I think interests me anyway, the word thing. I don't know any place in the whole Bible where Chag HaShavuot is referred to as Shavuot, even in Aramaic. As the Shavuot, it's always called Aseret, except if you're quoting a pasuk from the Torah that actually says Chag HaShavuot. But it's never called Chag HaShavuot. Something tells me that the language of Aseret somehow penetrated the Bavli's usual practice of always referring to that holiday as Aseret and never by its biblical name.
That's a keen observation. I don't know. I mean, we could, if somebody has ready access to one of those databases, we can quickly look to see. So you'll send us your findings, Yehudi. But it's an interesting observation. Itmar, I've told you many times, is a technical word. It means there is a machloket amorayim. Right, and the word itmar means it is stated. But it's a code word that says what we're about to tell you is a machloket amorayim. Rabbi Chiya bar Asi, Omar Rav, halacha k'Rabbi Yossi. Ushmuel amar halacha k'Rabbi Meir. So there's a machloket about who who the halacha is like. Is the halacha like Rebbe Meir? Rebbe Meir here is assumed to be the Rashi says that means the Tanakama. The Tanakama, the anonymous opinion is always that of Rebbe Meir. So is it like Rebbe Meir, who said that on the day following one of the happy Megillat Ta'anit days, you're permitted to give a eulogy, that the following day is not quite as serious in its celebration, and you would be allowed to eulogize on the day after one of those dates? Or is it like Rabbi Yossi, who was machmir and said not only can't you fast on that day, but you also cannot eulogize neither on the day before nor on the day after? So there's a machloket about who the halacha is like. So Shmuel, the Amora Shmuel, who said the halacha is lenient like Rebbe Meir. So the Gemara asks, Umi amar Shmuel hachi? Did Shmuel really say that? Did Shmuel really say the halacha is like Rebbe Meir? Did Shmuel really agree that on the day following a Megillat Ta'anit holiday, you are allowed to eulogize? Vahatanya, there he's on record. He says, actually, it's a brisa in Megillat Ta'anit. Vahatanya, Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Uma Talmud Lomar Behon Shte Pa'amim. Why does it say the word Behon on it? You see Rashi here, Behon, here, Ma Talmud Lomar Behon, de lo lehit ana Behon, umiktsatehun de lo le mispeid Behon. You can't fast on those days, and on some of those days you can't give eulogy. So why does it say Behon on those days twice? So
that's the first line of the
Megillah. Right, but so why is it repeated? So they're learning out from that repetition of the word Behon, Shtei Pa'amim, Lomar Lecha Shehen Asurin Lifnehem, V'lacharehen. It's forbidden both on the day before and the day after. Lifnehem V'lacharehen Mutarin. V'omar Shmuel, Halacha K'Rabban Shimon Ben Gamliel. So Shmuel said, the halacha is like Rabban Gamliel. Mi'ikara savir kevan de lekatana de mekel k'Rebbe Meir. At first Shmuel didn't know, apparently, about Rebbe Meir's position. Shmuel wanted the most lenient opinion. And he thought that the most lenient opinion, was that of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, right? Omar halacha k'Rabbi Meir. Kevan d'shama l'Rabban Shimon d'Shimon d'Mekil tvei. Omar halacha k'Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel. So in other words, at first he said the halacha was like Rabbi Meir, but then when he found an even more lenient opinion, the opinion of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, he went with that. So when the earlier position had said that Shmuel said the halacha is like Rebbe Meir, that was before he found an even more lenient position. V'chein amar Bali. V'chein amar Bali. Bali, who's Bali? Bali was an Amora, but he's like, doesn't appear that frequently. It's a strange name, Bali. V'chein amar Bali, Omar Rabbi Chia bar Abba, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, halacha k'Rabbi Yossi. They said the halacha was like Rabbi Yossi. They were stringent that you can't have a eulogy neither on the day before nor on the day after. So why did they follow the opinion of Rabbi Yossi? Omar le Rabbi Chia la Bali, Asbara lacha, I will explain to you. Ki Omar Rabbi Yochanan, halacha k'Rabbi Yossi, Adalo lihit anna. That's talking about not fasting on the next day, but not about eulogies. We've gotten confused. We think the two always go together, but that's not the case. When he said you can't do it on the day before or the day after, he was saying you can't fast on the day before or the day after a happy Megillat Ta'anit day. But, however, he said that you are allowed to eulogize on the next day. And Rashi says, Halacha adalo lehit ana, that it's talking about not fasting, but eulogizing is okay. The yamim haktuvim b'megillat ta'anit, on those days listed in the Megillat Ta'anit, delo lehit ana lifnehem asurin, v'lachareim mutarin, k'rebi yossi, delo k'rebi meir, de'amar af lifnehem mutar, aval adelo lemispad ein halacha k'rebi yossi. And of course, the halacha is like not like any of these people, because as we will see next time, the whole Megillat Ta'anit is no longer operative. Okay, next week we will finish the second perek, and we'll have a siyum, and everybody has to bring their own l'chaim, because we're still learning on Zoom. Okay?
Very
good. So next week, all of us in Israel, we will have changed the clocks.
That was pointed out. That's actually the following Motzei Shabbat, not this coming Motzei Shabbat.
Oh, you're right. Right. So I'm sorry, Yehudi. I was mistaken. It's the following week is the problem. Next week is regular for everybody in all parts of the planet.
So we're talking. And next week is going to be the 25th of October. Just 1 week, there'll be a difference.
No,
Tuesday, November 1st.
Tuesday, November 1st. It's a 6-hour difference instead of. Yes. Okay.